All right, welcome back. This week we have a lot to talk about. We have two new sets. We talked about Eternal Masters a little bit last week, but we now have the Conspiracy set announced. We're going to be talking about what that does with the card printing schedule and whether it means that any of those sets will become more valuable based on, you know, where they are in the scheme of things. Chaz is also going to be telling us about the Eternal format. I don't know if it exists yet. I don't know if it'll ever exist, but it is a captivating and interesting thing. He's on the ground level of talking about it with people, and we're going to get the story on that. So first of all, let's talk about what was just announced yesterday, which was Conspiracy. And people may remember it. It is the multiplayer-centric drafting format. It introduces interesting elements and cards that only affect your draft. The idea is that you'd sit down with four or eight people, draft the set, and then you would play multiplayer games afterward. The original Conspiracy had a few cool things happening. It was an interesting way to print new spells, like Council's Judgment, the Will of the Council kind of card, along with some older chase cards. And it was also a way to create a new and different match drafting experience. On the other hand, people reported that they would do one or two Conspiracy drafts, and that was about what the format was good for. That, especially since it was one big multiplayer game, there'd be the one player who got mana screwed and never had a chance in the game, or there would be two people who colluded and ended up taking down the game. So we hope that Conspiracy this time around will have better options for handling those things. And I have to trust Wizards that they're going to be a little bit better about making a more interesting multiplayer format. So I wanted to throw it to you, Kelly. I know that you like doing these sorts of events and playing and these sorts of things. What are you looking forward to with Conspiracy, and what do you think will help at this time?
Well, with Conspiracy, I think that the key is multiplayer, of course. And I've never been a huge multiplayer guy, so to get me to play multiplayer, they have to add something interesting to the dynamic. Last time they did voting, which I thought was really cool. It added the diplomacy elements to the game. I'm not really sure what they're going to do this time, but I hope it's something equally as interactive. I want to see reprints of fun new cards. You know, I shouldn't say fun new cards. I want fun new reprints of old cards. I want to see, you know, things like Brainstorm getting reprinted again. Conspiracy was awesome for my cube because it reprinted a bunch of random, useful commander staples at common and uncommon, like, you know, stuff like Brainstorm and, like, Sakura Tribe Elder and, you know, trivial things like that. And as we'll probably talk about later in the podcast, introducing more card availability into the game is generally a good thing. So maybe we hope to see something like Ghostly Prison get reprinted. It's definitely an opportunity for Wizards to open up the valve a little bit to eat and do some quantitative easing on cards that really shouldn't be as high demand as they are right now. Like, you know, the Ghosts and Christmas of the World just don't deserve to be $20 cards. So I think Conspiracy will be successful if it puts into circulation a number of assets that are in need of being put into circulation. So from a finance standpoint, that's how I think it would be a success. It's unlikely that we're going to see something printed in Conspiracy that's going to make a mark on Legacy. Nothing printed in Conspiracy will be legal in Modern or Standard. So realistically, it's just about them printing fun casual cards, reprinting things that need reprinting, and finding good mechanics that will encourage interactivity in multiplayer games as opposed to the sort of backroom politicking that goes on with, hey, I won't attack you if you attack him this turn. I like that the voting system kind of codifies things like that. I hope they take that to the next level. So, we'll see. I'm actually, I'm stoked for both Conspiracy and the Eternal Masters, probably Eternal Masters more so, even though I'm not really interested in paying $40 to do a booster draft. I still want the opportunity to draft, Force and Will or something. So, we'll see. It's all really exciting because, again, it's an opportunity to just infuse a game with reprints that badly need reprinting, like, you know, everything that's gone up in price in the last 6 months.
Yeah, you know, for example, Conspiracy had Stifle in it, which dropped the price in Scourge from $40 to $6, which is a big deal. I mean, it sucks if you're holding a bunch of stifles, but that was a card that sees a lot of play in Legacy and people needed. Misdirection was the other big one. That got reprinted in Conspiracy. And when you think about those, Misdirection is a card that makes sense as a multiplayer reprint. Stifle, maybe not so much. It's a very narrow card. But it was interesting to see that they put both in there. And I think for Legacy access concerns, Stifle more than Misdirection even. So we have the precedent of them putting in cards like that, where the idea is just, you know, let's put some more on the market, let's drive the price down. You brought up Ghostly Prison. You know, that's a card that's gone up to $17 in the last week. Ensnaring Bridge is probably not a good multiplayer card. It's probably a pretty terrible card for it. But Ghostly Prison, I think, would be a fair enough multiplayer card. You know, we're looking at those things as possible reprints. And for listeners out there, if you're wondering how this will financially affect you, let's say you're looking at your set of your stifles and wondering if you're going to get gutted like that again, I think it's always dangerous to be holding expensive uncommons. And I think that we've been over this on the cast before, but like you look at the rarity of a card and you also look at its name. So, for example, Carplusen Forest has a much less chance of getting reprinted in anything because there's only one Carplusen Forest, and it's not on every plane, whereas a Temple Garden could be anywhere. A Misdirection could be anywhere. So I think that if you're holding money on commons, especially you're holding Ghostly Prisons and things like that, I would be selling into the hype on that.
Yeah, you even mentioned last week, like, those random, like, even, like, Portal 3K or, you know, just any of those random rares or uncommons that could easily just be, you know, their prices just come down drastically when they get a reprint like this because these cards were just old and there's not a lot of supply. But, you know, suddenly when you add a, you know, set like Conspiracy, cards like Stifle, Exploration, Pernicious Deed, you know, everything just comes crashing down because there just isn't that much new supply these days when it comes from, you know, a Legacy standpoint. But, you know, even they can even throw a few modern cards in there, too, and I think it would be a real big success. Considering Conspiracy is one of those sets that are normal MSRP, you know, there's a lot of supply out there, and it's meant to be on shelves for a long time. So, I mean, I agree with everything you said last week.
You know, and Chaz, you bring up things like Pernicious Deed. You're right, there were cards like Pernicious Deed, I mean, Intangible Virtue, Mirari's Wake. They had no problem last time around printing the like casual staples and stars,
right,
that they want to have cool cards that appear in multiplayer. I think they kind of want to give people the commander experience without, like, the commander brokenness. And I think that's probably a good place to shoot for in Conspiracy also. So expect them to be printing things like that. I mean, I could see something like Greater Good would be a card that could come to mind about
right.
that. There's just, like, Altar of Dementia was a card that just plummeted in price after its reprints, and it probably needed that. That was just it was a very good card in draft, actually, because you could mill people to death with Altar of Dementia and Conspiracy. So it was probably an improper printing to have there. But on the other hand, it, you know, that's what the kind of casual card that they're looking to reprint.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at what we got the first time around and you go from there, like that model, they're going to throw in like some key uncommons and commons, some just random rares, you know, that are just, and mythics, I think Pernicious Deed was a mythic, that are just, you know, that have over time increased and just randomly like $20 for some reason, like Exploration was like a $25 rare from Urza's just because it's just an old card. And, yeah, I mean, after these reprints, they go down drastically. So I think it would be a good win to, you know, assuming they based Conspiracy 2 off of Conspiracy 1, I think we're going to get a nice assortment of commander casual stuff, you know, draft specific stuff, and some key reprints as well.
And speaking of key reprints, I'm going to go on record now. I think one of the cards you'll see in Conspiracy is Phyrexian Altar. It's 3 mana, artifact, sacrifice a creature, make a mana of any color. It's one of those cards that has just been kind of a bedrock of commander decks. People like it for all sorts of reasons. It is currently a $28 card. which is absurd. You know, I mean, but even when you look at 2 years ago and or 4 years ago even,
right.
I'm looking at the charts, it was still $7 4 years ago. So that's a card they could look at. I mean, if multiplayer is great with cards like Threaten, and, you know, what's better than stealing a creature for a turn, stealing it and then eating it after you've gotten your use out of it? So I could see a plausible reason why they would put that in. And I would say something like Phyrexian Altar would appear, and that would be devastating if they, for example, printed it as an uncommon. I don't know that it's worth a rare, but if I were holding Phyrexian Altars, I'd be getting rid of them.
Yeah, I mean, you never know when they throw a curveball. I mean, even something like Sylvan Library can realistically show up in one of these sets, like Conspiracy. It's just one of those cards, like Exploration, that can just randomly be thrown in there. I don't think there's any real set, you know, criteria of just these random cards that they throw in there.
Well, Chaz, you had brought up when we were talking about the issue that we're going to... I guess I want to file this under the category called Too Much of a Good Thing, because we're going to have Shadows Over Innistrad in April. We're going to have its sequel set, presumably 3 months after that, so that would be July.
Right.
We're also going to be having MTG Conspiracy, which we think is making up for the loss of Clash Packs and things like that. And we're also going to be having Eternal Masters. I gotta say, like, I'm on a limited budget for buying sealed product and stuff. There's gonna be cool stuff here. How is this gonna affect the opening rates on these cards?
I'd have to say, one of these sets, maybe, I mean, I'm leaning towards, I mean, you talked about this off-cast, a couple of these sets are just going to be, under-opened. I mean, there's just, you're getting all this sensory overload. Like you said, we're getting Conspiracy, Eternal Masters, Shadows Over Innistrad, and Eldritch Moon in a pretty barely constrained timing. They're really overlapping each other, and I just think, like, with so much product, getting thrown our way in such a short time, sets like Eternal Masters, even maybe Conspiracy, just are under open because there's just not enough, you know, not enough funds or just not enough interest, or, you know, you really have to kind of pick and choose where you want to be when it comes to these sets. I mean, we could realistically see some $80 mythic pop out of one of these sets just because it's like Magic Origins, where there's just not a lot of it that's opened because there's just so much stuff going on.
You know, and I'm looking at a post from Mark Rosewater on his Tumblr, and somebody had asked about Conspiracy 2, Eternal Masters, and Commander also. I mean, we will be getting Commander. We'll probably get it beginning from the Vault this year. And they were asking, you know, is this the norm going forward to have these supplementals? And Mark's answer was along the lines that we're making these products for different audiences.
Yeah.
That, you know, the Commander overlap is not the same as the Eternal overlap and the Conspiracy overlap, and I can understand that. I think the other thing, though, is that, and this is my intuition about Hasbro/Wizards Core strategy of marketing, is that part of what they want to do is acquisition, which is getting new customers to come in your store, but a new focus seems to be retention sales. So let's say you have a budget of $80 a month on Magic. That's about $1,000 a year. They want to see what they can do to bump that to $100 or $120 a month. Like, let's see if we can get you to buy more boxes this year. And, you know, that makes sense. It's a lot easier to sell to somebody who's already opened their wallet to you once. It's also a way of diversifying your offerings away from bad sets like Battle for Zendikar. Because I have every feeling that even though they did that and they're going to have a bad quarter from Battle for Zendikar, they're going to have great quarters from their supplemental sets alone. So I guess it's like when we see these things, we have to remember that Wizards is trying to find ways to get you to spend more money on the game, and that any explanation for why they're doing this otherwise, it has to be more plausible than that. Like the philosopher David Hume said that extraordinary claims require extraordinary proof, which is like a version of Occam's razor. And I think with this, it's like, is Wizards doing this to lower the price of Modern or the price of access to Legacy? Or are they doing this because it's a way for them to make more money off of you because you're already playing the game?
I think it's a mixture of, like, everything. And, you know, we talked about, like, there could be sets that are under-opened and there could be some random $80 mythic, but just because there's some random overpriced card doesn't mean that there's a lot of positives to take away from this. Like, yes, the player growth has stalled a bit, so they want to push more product out there to lure people in from all different kinds of positions that play this game, from casual, EDH, or Commander, what have you, Legacy, Modern players, all different kinds of players, in with all this type, all these different types of product. And, you know, the community asked for this, and we're getting it. So I think this is really a win, because we talked about a lot of the issues with Modern. We talked a lot about, you know, there needs to be more of a release valve or more chances to include some of these much-needed smarter reprints for card or sets like Modern or formats like Modern or even Legacy. And I mean, these are all great chances to do that. Presumably we might get I think it was confirmed that we're even getting like a From the Vault towards the end of the year, or a Commander or something like that set. So, I mean, we just have a ton of different opportunities to include some really smart reprints, and, you know, sets like Conspiracy is just a great way to do that in conjunction with all these regular release sets. Because, I mean,
the point that you're missing here is that not only is it an awesome release valve to introduce desperately needed supply into the market, it does so in a contextualized way.
Right.
Meaning that you release the 250 card-ish Conspiracy set, and you're not just saying, it's not like a From the Vault where you go, here's 15 awesome cards. It's not like that, where it's just like, these are obviously just there to give you cool reprint options to increase supply on scarce cards. With Conspiracy, it's an entire format, and it gives people who have... So I'm remembering that Flamecon Kavu, which was the answer to a Doug trivia question a couple of weeks back, was reprinted in Conspiracy, and it's an awesome card. It's a 4/2 for 4 that does 4 damage to a creature when it enters the battlefield. And a newer player who had experience with the older cards, maybe is building a cube or something, wouldn't have any idea that Flamecon Kavu even exists. But when they print it in a set like Conspiracy, which you can go to a pre-release, you can draft it, you can do all kinds of stuff with it, it's been contextualized sufficiently that the player will play it, will open it in their pool and go, hey, this looks like a big creature that can kill another creature. This is probably pretty good. And right. I can tell you that some of my favorite ideas for casual decks have come from interactions I've seen in Limited or in Cube Draft. And so the fact that they can issue reprints by the dozens multiple times a year to, you know, they can reprint a card like Ghostly Prison down to a dollar card. If they print enough of it. And it's not like this is reserved list stuff. No one's going to be like, yeah, I was holding these ghostly prisons for 10 years. Now look at me. I'm broke. No one's going to freak out about it, because it's an uncommon. And the people who get hosed are the dealers that pay 10, 15 bucks for them. And then they get smashed by a reprinting at uncommon again in a highly open set like Conspiracy. So it's more that they're, it's a valve to intelligently introduce reprints, and by doing so in context, helping players figure out what to do with their, you know, game pieces. You're getting these cards from draft. Well, now you've got these random commons or uncommons that you've opened. You need to figure out what to do with them. Like, you can sell them, sure, but a lot of people, like, when I go to a pre-release, I just take the commons and the uncommons and I throw them in a box of playables so I can just, put them in decks or in Cube Draft or whatever later on. So
right.
It's good because the context is super important. It's not just here's a box set of 500 cards, go buy them.
Right. And in turn, I mean, it helps Wizards, I mean, sell product and continue the organic growth of their player base. I mean, it's exciting when so much stuff is coming out and it draws people in, undoubtedly. And, I mean, a lot of people are going to complain, quote unquote, that, you know, there's so much stuff at one time, you know, RIP my wallet and stuff like that. But that, in that context, like you're saying, Kelly, it's a good problem to have. I mean,
everyone's complaining, like, there's so much stuff going on, oh, my poor wallet. Like, you don't have to buy every product. Like, they're not.
Right.
If you're a standard player, you don't have to buy it to Conspiracy or Eternal Matters. If you think they're cool, then it's like a case of, like, shut up and take my money. Like, I'm going to series because I don't know what psychographic I fall into. Like, I'm definitely a Spike because I have fun by playing to win. But part of that fun is figuring out a new format. So I'm some weird hybrid psychographic that will just literally buy and play with whatever they come out with. Like, I'll buy a dual deck. I don't care. I just want to jam games with something interesting that I have to figure out for the first time. I'm like a novelty junkie psychographic.
So, well, and you know, I think that what Wizards wants to do is they want to recapture the pre-release magic for people. And I think that they've been doing a better job of this over the last few years of making the pre-release feel like an amazing experience. And not only from the story time of like playing with like the fight the monster, build your hero thing in Theros, which, you know, it was what it was. But they also seed the pre-release packs to be have more expeditions and have more good cards, so you know that from a purely Spike grinder standpoint, it's worth going to the pre-release because you're going to get more of a shot at those things. And they don't publicly acknowledge it, but everybody knows that's true. I think when they publish sets like Conspiracy or Eternal Masters, they want to kind of create that experience again for people that you can come and play and have a fun Conspiracy draft or two, and maybe that's all they want you to do. Maybe they just want you to, you know, play two drafts of this and then be done. They want you to have a cool time.
I think that's exactly right.
And that's
it. I think you're exactly right that they want to recreate that pre-release atmosphere.
You know, you buy a box of Conspiracy, you sock it away, and then you open it up a year later, and, like, everybody has a fun time again, but they're not really interested in lowering the price of cards with it. They just want to make something fun for people, which is cool.
But I think they can and will end up doing both of those things. Like, just Conspiracy is going to have. I would be very, very surprised if we didn't see specifically Ghostly Prison and Conspiracy, just for any number of reasons. But like, I think that on it, they want to capture that pre-release excitement, and they want people like me, who the only time I buy sealed product is when I'm playing with it. I don't buy packs to crack. I don't buy boxes to bolster my collection. I tend to just, you know, draft sealed. Sell the expensive cards and use that to fund my next drafts and sealeds and just kind of accumulate the commons and uncommons for my playables casual stash. And so by releasing something like Conspiracy, they get me to come to a pre-release. They get me to maybe buy a box and put it in a closet, just something I'm probably going to just start doing for every set because, you know, you never know when, like, Doug, when we were at the Pro Tour, you and I were just sitting around talking, and we're like, man, I wish we could play some BFZ sealed right now. And we got ourselves some packs, but, like, if I had just brought a couple sealed boxes in my carry-on luggage, like, we could have been jamming games all night, every night. And, like, you know, a sealed box only costs $100, so it's like you can get a lot of enjoyment out of that, and then you still got all the cards left over.
Yeah, and I think people are going to be doing that with Eternal Masters. I mean, we've got to put air quotes around only $100 for the cost of a box because that's a lot of money to people. But what it does do, I mean, what I'm expecting with Eternal Masters is that somebody's going to buy a box and then be like, okay, let's draft this thing tonight, guys. All the cards are mine. All the cards belong to me at the end of the night. But, right. I'm going to use sleeves because you're going to open good stuff, but we all get the fun of opening the boxes, we all get the fun of playing it, and I get the cards at the end. I think that's a really clean way to do it. I think that's how people did it with Conspiracy also. So I see that stuff happening again. When you think about it, that the Magic demographic is aging in ways where, like, the 14-year-old kids in my neighborhood who play Magic at lunch are not going to be buying Conspiracy boxes. Like, the idea of $15 for a Conspiracy draft is just unfathomable for them because drafts are unfathomable. They buy and rip packs, and most Magic players are like that. But this is for the more sophisticated person who may spend $1,000 a year buying singles, but they never buy sealed product. And this may be the way to coax those people back into buying directly from Wizards. I'm certainly not going to be buying packs to rip, and I don't draft a whole lot, but I could see getting in on a box of stuff like this, especially when I knew that it would have really cool cards in it that I might actually want to have.
Yeah, so. I mean, at the end of the day, it's a net positive, however, you know, you want to really look at it. And I think this is a really good, a good problem to have, that there's so much product being released, and you have all these chances to, like Kelly said, in a context, be able to inject some extra reprints into the wild, or just cards in general, and, you know, make it a enjoyable thing for players at the same time.
I think if there's one complaint about this, that people are saying it is too much of a good thing, and I definitely hear that from store owners who are worried about picking up three or four high-ticket or specialty sets that they may not actually be able to sell. I think Wizards is brilliant here, and maybe I'm going to give them too much credit for something that goes against us, is that one of the modern, I'm sure, I don't know if you guys are familiar with the acronym FOMO, or fear of missing out. And it's a millennial psychographic issue that people see what their friends are doing and they don't ever want to miss out on a good time. And I think people who are like, this is too much, slow down. That's a real claim. I think that this is a legitimate thing to say, but I think it comes from a place of people saying, this is all really cool stuff. I can't afford to do all of this stuff on my normal budget.
Right.
You guys are bad for giving me things I'm not going to be able to do. And that's bad. Like, I can't budget for this. And I can understand that. I think it's brilliant of Wizards to try and capitalize on people being like, well, you know, for $10 a pack, you can get Eternal Masters. And if you got to spend money to make money, you know, you buy three packs, you'll pick up a money rare. You can use that rare to get two more packs. It's kind of like gambling in that regard. So I can see where people feel that way, but they also, if you're feeling like there's too much coming out and you're upset you won't be able to play with all of it, bear in mind that that is fear of missing out coming to speak, and that's just something that you, like, once you acknowledge what it is, it gets a lot easier to deal with and to prioritize what you want to do. And that maybe you don't draft Conspiracy a whole lot. Maybe you go and do it once, or you watch a friend do it and you have fun that way, but what are you guys' thoughts on that? I'm going to throw that out to the cast.
Yeah, no, I think that's a great point to bring up. And I think if there's anything, you know, to do with that, it's that at one point people are going to have to sit down. Like you said, that they can't budget for everything. So they're going to have to forego or minimize something that, you know, one of these sets that they can't really partake in. And I keep coming back to Eternal Masters. I think that might be the set that people are like, you know what, I'll draft, you know, I'll get, rustle up some cash or put some cash aside. I'll draft one time and I'll get to experience it and that's it. I mean, I don't think, you know, it's not really a easy sell to say, oh, you know, come play Eternal Masters. I mean, I don't care really what player it is, Cube, Commander, what have you. It's a hard sell at $50 a draft. And I'm assuming it'll be close to that. I mean, there's only so many times you're going to be able to do that, and I don't care how good the draft format is. It's just, I think that's the one that people would likely stay away from in all of this. Because essentially you're getting the same experience in Conspiracy 2, and it's actually kind of upsetting that they released Conspiracy 2 and Eternal Masters, because I think I was discussing with you guys that I would have rather seen Modern Masters in place of Eternal Masters, and, you know, something like Conspiracy for, you know, these Cube, Commander, you know, you can even sprinkle some Legacy stuff in there like Exploration. It's just a great set to be able to do all that. And here we go. It's like, they announced it anyway, and now it's like, well, then this really could have been Modern Masters. So, I don't know. I just feel like...
Name matter. It doesn't matter what they call it. It matters what they put in it.
Right.
Right. Like if they can and likely will print cards that are useful in modern.
There's definitely going to be some overlap.
There's no way that they're not looking at these two sets as a way to reprint more stuff for modern without doing so overtly.
Yeah.
And in name. Like just because they're probably. That it's the goals it achieves and what the goals they state for it can be very, very different. So, you know, it's not like every card in Eternal Masters isn't, you know, it's probably going to have cards that are like, they could reprint Aether Vial without any trouble because that card is used in Legacy everything. And so, sure, did it just get reprinted in the Modern Masters? Sure, it did. But like, I mean, I'm holding on to a playset, and I'm not, like, cowering in fear of a reprint. But that said, you know, I wouldn't put it past them to reprint it, and I don't think that would help the price any. So it's more like the stated goal of the set doesn't necessarily have to match up with what actually comes to pass. Because people who play Modern will probably have some interest in these reprint sets, especially if they're putting in cards that will be useful to modern players. I think they would be insane not to, because modern is the hot thing on the block right now. And, you know, Wizards of the Coast doesn't formally recognize a secondary market, but they understand when a card undergoes an abnormal surge in demand, and they just don't make that overt connection to demand equals price. But as far as they're concerned, they're aware that, like, say, you know, our pariah of the episode, Ghostly Prison, they're aware that Ghostly Prison demand is through the roof compared to supply. So they're going to issue more supply. And is that for, quote, modern? Sure. What is it for, casual? Sure. Cube? Whatever. It doesn't matter what it's for. They could print that in one of these sets without having it out of place while still serving the goal of keeping modern. They can't say affordable, but they can say accessible. You know, they can... When you think about their reprint policy, you have to understand they're not thinking in terms of, like, this card's too expensive. They're thinking this card's too inaccessible. Price is simply a function of supply and demand. They just don't solve the algebra for that function. You know?
Right.
That's why dual lands are very scarce, because they aren't allowed to reprint any of them. And therefore, the supply is low and demand is high. They just don't go so far as to quantify the demand. They just know it's high. So
they don't solve that equation publicly anyway.
Right. And I would say that they don't do it internally either, on any formal basis. You're not going to find, like, a secret paper trail about, like, man, have you seen the price of this card lately? It's like, sure, on some level, you can't get away from the fact that cards have prices, but they don't take it into consideration so much as they sort of notice that cards have higher than normal prices, and then they come to the office with the understanding of, like, hey, there seems to be a lot of interest in Ghostly Prison this week. It's been steadily getting more and more in demand for the last couple months. What do you say we increase supply to help make the card more accessible? So,
yeah.
Also, the thinly veiled way of talking about the same thing we talk about.
Yeah, so I think the takeaways for people who are wondering what to do finance-wise is that none of these sets are going to be good for the value of your cards directly. So let me explain. Like, Modern Masters was good for the value of cards that were not in it. See Inquisition of Kozilek, for example. With these sets, there are potentially Commander, Conspiracy, and Eternal Masters, as well as possibly From the Vaults. There are enough sets that if it is not in one of them, you still have to be fearful of it being in another. Some things you can narrow down, like, I'm pretty sure Mana Drain is going to be in Eternal Masters, but it won't show up in anything else. So you can kind of clip that out. But the only time you'll know a card is safe from this season of reprinting is that all three sets will have been printed and yours did not get hit. So I would be, like, Baleful Strix is a card that could go into any three of those sets. Three Visits is a card that I keep talking about on the cast, but it's like the definitional example of a card I wouldn't be holding right now. What other tips do you guys have for people to avoid getting burned by these sets, and what smart moves can they take?
I got a good tip, which is to keep listening to this podcast, because for the last year we've been harping on about reserve list cards, get reserve list cards. I've written about it, we've talked about it to death. Like, there's a reason that we harped on that, and now you're seeing it. You're seeing, like, now Nullrod is the latest candidate, which has been the most blindingly obvious choice of a reserve list card to buy forever. I had a few. I sold them and took my part off. I'm going to answer this way. But, like, to stay on top of things, like, you should be paying more attention to what people who do this professionally are saying, because what has happened time and time again is that it has proven to be true. Like, we were talking about reserve list cards for a while because you don't have this reprint concern with reserve list cards. And then people would ask, like, well, what's the catalyst? What's going to make a reserve list card go up in price? To which my response is anything. I mean, literally anything at all could happen to cause a card that will literally never be reprinted to increase in price. So why did all these eternal cards spike on the reserve list? Well, because a bunch of other ones got reprinted, and people extrapolated that would mean more demand for Legacy as a format, and thus bought the cards that couldn't be reprinted. Other than that, I mean, just pay attention to what's been reprinted before. Like, I'm talking about Aether Vials, and I need to go make a decision about my playset, because I don't think they'll put it into Conspiracy, but I do think they'll put it into Eternal Masters as a rare, because it's starting to creep up more and more and more in price, and realistically, reprinting it didn't really do anything to its price. It's still very high. So what you do is you look at the cards where you have a disproportionate amount of the collection's value. So like in my case, ether vials, you know, let's say ether vials is, you know, $30-$40 a piece. That's a substantial chunk of value. I would look at your collection and see how it breaks down in terms of the power law. Like, what are those top 20% worth of cards, the top 20% of cards that are worth 80% of your collection's value, and make sure your reprint exposure is, you're not overexposed there. You're not going to be able to use a crystal ball to figure out what's going to get reprinted for sure, but, like, you can use your brain and figure out that, like, you know, well, obviously reserve list cards are very safe, but, like, are your ether vials going to get reprinted? Are your things like Stifle going to get reprinted? You know Force of Will is getting reprinted, so it's too late for that one. But, like, if you have cards that look like they're a good bet for Eternal Masters, you can choose to sell them and try to dodge the reprint, but you will also dodge the game if you guess wrong. So ultimately, it comes down to a guessing game and how much you want to micro-optimize your portfolio. Like, if it's your playset of something that you're not sure, is it going to get reprinted, is it not going to get reprinted, then if you're playing with it, then don't worry about it. Like, that's, focus on the utility of the game piece and don't worry about, like, flipping it for a profit. But if you're just talking about cards in your own portfolio, like, I'm not playing with Ether Vials, I got them in a collection at a good price, and I just a way to sell them. I mean, not, it might be time to get that exposure off the table and put that money at something else. Like, you know, a sealed box of product that I can stick in the closet and draft when I get bored one day.
Absolutely, and during this time, people got to remember that there's going to be two Innistrad sets being printed, so there's going to be plenty of stuff for you to play with. If you don't feel like getting burned on this stuff, or you don't want to expose yourself to volatility, just plan to play the standard game while you're getting at it, which is to say, work on the predictive markets in standard, either in paper or Magic Online. Other than that, Kelly, I love your advice. Just, you know, listen to this podcast, but also be informed in general. I think we talk about this a lot. The difference between getting stuck with cards and getting rid of them at a reasonable time is paying attention to spoilers and rumors and things like that. And it doesn't take a lot of work.
Read articles. These, you know, fellow writers don't do it for no reason. You know, they take the time and the effort to write things down and, you know, pick and choose some really good information and advice in there. I mean, they're watching things very closely. You know, most of this stuff has been talked about for a long time now. I mean, it doesn't really, I mean, like I said, I mean, reserve list cards, you know, that's not something I always bring up because, you know, it doesn't really take a genius to say, you know, buy a bunch of reserve list cards because there's never being reprinted. That's kind of always an underlying, you know, tone, but I never really felt, I don't know. I just never really gotten to the whole investing in the reserve list thing. It was just never for me. Not to say that it's obviously panning out and benefiting people, but, you know, it's just, some unfortunate circumstances, with the release of Modern Masters and likely subsequent releases of Modern Masters. Or Eternal Masters, rather.
Well, I think we've got some good tips for people, and I think we've done a pretty thorough job of looking at what these sets will do in the future, how you can prepare for them, and why Wizards is doing them. So if you've got questions, send us questions on Twitter. You can find our Twitter profiles and links to all of the ways you can get a hold of us by going to quietspeculation.com/QSCast. There you can also leave us a message on the app that we've got up there, so you can leave us voicemail if you'd like. You can send us emails and definitely check out our back archive of shows because we try to talk about things we consider evergreen, which would be topics that are always important. So we hope that our podcasts from 5 months ago or a year ago are still interesting. And we always try and keep it interesting on the cast here. So until next week, I'm Doug.
I'm Kelly.
I'm Chaz.
And thanks for listening to QS Cast.